We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Computer, this is Data.
I'm an android.
I'm Major League Basketball.
I was processing all of the information. Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Major League Basketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Hello, and welcome back to the Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast. My name is Tom Z, joined as always by Tim, a.k.a. Cranges McBasketball. And Tim, the Lakers got the finish to the season that they were relatively hoping for, got into that eighth spot now in the 7-8 game for the play-in. Before we get into all that scouting report, we'll touch on Denver and kind of all the crazy tweets I see people like, tank to not play them. You're crazy. You should feel crazy and bad and crazy. You win basketball games in the postseason. Anyway, how are you, Tim?
I'm doing well, Tom. I'm always sad to have to throw away two scouting reports that I did. I had the Suns and Warriors ones ready to go. We may still need the Warriors one. Hopefully not. But good. You know, it's hard to have a bad day coming off of a win like yesterday, and it feels good playing the same team again tomorrow. It probably raises familiarity. The team doesn't have to travel at all. Like, I think this is a great situation in terms of being in the 7-8. That's exactly what we wanted. In terms of who you're playing, I think the Pels are a great matchup for the Lakers, and there's a reason they've been beating the hell out of them most of these games this season. And so I'm in high spirits and really, really happy to get to this time of year again. This is my favorite time of year. We get to dig into all this little nitty-gritty X's and O's and the tactics and the strategy and the adjustments. And, you know, the play-in's a little microcosm of that, but I'm hoping this team can win so that we can get to playoff basketball again. You know, that's by far the most enjoyable time of year for me.
And I feel like it's our bread and butter here on this podcast, getting into so much of the technical coaching adjustments that you're so good at communicating and trying to figure out how the Lakers can win that chess match game in and game out. We'll get to that in here in a little bit, but just really quick, want to touch on the last couple games because you're a little bold to even try to start scouting teams, if I may, because so many things could have happened because of the seeding. But you threw a dart, and you know it could be useful down the line if, let's say, the Lakers lose and maybe have to face the Warriors again. Boom, there you go. You got a Warriors scouting report all ready to go.
Yeah, well, I did the same thing last year. I had a Kings scouting report fully put together, like 28 pages. Didn't need it. I believe I had another play-in one set up, but we didn't end up meeting it. So this is just part of the game. I feel for the teams more than I feel for me because, like, their jobs depend on success with this. And for so many teams in the league heading into yesterday, there were a lot of possible iterations for who they could face just a couple of days later or, you know, within a week. So I feel for the scouting departments. I've been there. I've gone through that. It is not fun during tournament play. As a player, as a coach, as a fan, as an analyst, tournament play is awesome. As somebody in that back room, I'll tell you, it sucks. It's so much of the good work you do never gets seen. But I don't know. Who knows? Maybe I'll post the Suns and Warriors scouting reports later on for anyone who wants to read those. But anyway, we know the opponent.
We did.
Things are clear. Are you, would you say you're, I know yesterday during the stream, we were kind of live rooting and changing our rooting interests for different games. Are you happy with how things turned out at this point?
It's fine. I think going through Denver in the first round has its advantages. I think getting the New Orleans matchup as opposed to like the Suns or the Kings, even at their current stature, I like obviously the team that we have beat consistently this season. And by, I was looking, so since D'Angelo Russell was traded, he was traded on February 8th last year, right? And got those other guys in and were quickly integrated and went on that run. The Lakers have won 5 games and only lost 1 to the Pelicans. And the one they lost him was on New Year's Eve without D'Angelo Russell. So I feel like this, and by the way, there is a 43-point game in there, but the average margin of victory is 21.8. It's not just like one big game. Yeah, it skews it a few points, but they won by 18, 15, 43. They lost by 20 with no D'Lo and had a really cold shooting night. And then 17, 16. I think like just how these teams are built against each other, the Lakers are just like a slightly better version of that physical drive and kick kind of offense with some, you know, perimeter guys who can kind of self-create and maybe hit some pull-ups, right? But you sub LeBron in for Brandon Ingram, and that, you know, that just completely changes the offense and how, and not to mention like just the size that the Lakers can throw at Zion. LeBron was doing fantastic on defense. So I feel optimistic, Tim, on multiple levels. Brandon Ingram was on a minutes restriction in that first game back. He is still getting integrated back into this offense after missing a few weeks. We'll see where he is physically, but it's on multiple levels that you got to feel confident in this Lakers-Pelicans matchup. So I guess, I don't know, is there, you know, a schematic adjustment you feel is coming that might worry you or throw a wrench in the consistent shellacking the Lakers have given to the Pelicans?
Yeah, I'd say I'm in a similar spot. I feel good heading into this between the 7-8 and the 9-10, like you're in the right spot. Among the opponents you could potentially face, this is the team I want to face. The vibes are horrible. We just beat them by a bunch. Like, we were looking at prices for the game. It doesn't look like the home crowd's super, you know, enthusiastic about hosting a play-in game for, I think, the third year in a row, and they haven't had good success with those, and not good success against this Lakers team. Like, there are a lot of aspects about this. You know, you don't have to travel back and forth. There's a lot to like about this matchup, the situation. Needing to, if you win, then go play Denver is challenging. I would much rather play some of the other teams. And I guess we'll talk about, you know, what does that mean later on in terms of how you approach this. But, you know, go in there, try to win. And there are pros and cons of facing Denver early. And again, we'll touch on that later. But getting to this series, as you mentioned, like, it's been one-sided other than that one game where a lot of things from a health and availability standpoint for the Lakers wasn't where we'd love for it to be. I expect the Pelicans to need to like have a like heart to heart right now and be like, all right, what do we do differently? We have to change up how we're approaching things because we're getting blown out by this team. We're getting our butts kicked time after time. We've got to do something different. And so I expect them to try some different things. And we saw them throw out a few different looks later in the game yesterday. One thing I expect is probably more Valanciunas. They only played him, how many minutes did he end up getting? I know it was like 3 at one point, pretty deep into the game. But let's see here.
Yeah, we were wondering if he was injured, and we just missed an injury report because we don't hear the game audio that well. And he wasn't. He came back.
Yeah, he 7 minutes total for him, and like they weren't 7 super impactful minutes, but he's an important player for this team. And the Lakers have enough size across the board that if Valanciunas isn't playing, I think that gives the Lakers a big advantage just with their roster construction and the makeup of the team. So I expect the Pelicans to play their normal starting center more.
Don't you think the answer is Zion at the 5? Because there's just 2 non-spacers, seems like, is where the Lakers are allowed to really muck that paint up and always have Rui, LeBron, or AD. Someone is going to be the helper.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I would like to see Zion used in smarter ways as an off-ball cutter. Like, he should be like a hypercharged version of what we're seeing Rui do for the Lakers when he is off-ball. I know he's not a great shooter, but that guy cutting to the rim to catch and finish strong should be really good for for the Pels. So I think there are options within him as a spacer, and then Valanciunas as a role man or operating out of the post. I don't know. I think the path to beating this Lakers team, if you're the Pels, is like get some second chance opportunities, you know, draw AD to protect the rim, and then Valanciunas is open for those putbacks, for those offensive rebounds. Try to defend the rim a bit better than they did. We saw just how dominant the Lakers were in the first half at the rim, and the Pelicans really, really struggled to defend. And part of it too was they were defending ball screens with soft hedging a lot early, and the Lakers did a really good job picking that apart in smart tactical ways. So Valanciunas is part of the problem for them. I think, part of the solution. But to me, it's less like what is the optimal thing to do, and more like I think the vibes are bad enough that they'll just try something different. And so I think that's the easiest adjustment for them to try something different is get more size, get your starting center back out there. Defensively, I expect them to try to be like even more aggressive than they were and force the ball out quickly and make it easier for them in those 2v1s, 3v2s off ball to help and recover, because they soft hedged to start the game. And we saw them try to tag AD with the low man, but be super aggressive about getting high and tagging him almost at the free throw line as that was happening. And that led to those really wide open baseline cuts, often for Rui, often for dunks. And so that clearly wasn't working. But I think if you can come really hard and make that pass have to go out quickly, you make AD catch further away from the rim, and it gives you a chance to recover potentially. And you might be able to jump some of those passes or mix that in with some other coverages. Like, I think they need to try to force the issue, be the aggressor, try to get the crowd into things. Because if they sit back and do what they did last game, it was not working, and it will not work. And I don't think this Pels team is set up to like switch everything. If they try to play drop, like that is an option. And they could just try to, you know, stay at home, hope for some good back pressure, and hope for some Laker misses. I think that might be what we see them do as well. But I don't know exactly what they're going to go to, but they will need to make some big changes, because I don't know how you get a team to believe in the locker room, like, we got this, we can do this, after being, you know, that down bad 30 points yesterday. And you have to play the same team the next day to probably a juiceless crowd and like no real change in circumstance.
The Lakers, the one game they didn't shoot the ball well is the one they lost without D'Lo. And that was the one, Tim, where they started Prince, Rui, and Vando next to LeBron and AD. That was Austin coming off the bench.
Yeah, it's bad times. I don't look at that and say that's translatable. So I'm not all that worried. Was there anything from the earlier games that you think might translate over or give us reason for fear or hope in this game?
Well, so I am curious what you think going back and rewatching that in-season tournament. Like, the intensity was the closest to like a playoff game we saw, right? Versus like a game in February, which sometimes they're hit or miss, right? In depending on the matchups. That game had an intensity. Do you remember the Lakers were down after the first quarter, Tim?
In the game they won by like 40 points?
Correct.
I did not remember that.
They were down 30-29. And you know what we commented last game when we played the Pelicans? How many lobs did they miss? Dunks. Stuff at the rim.
We had counted four. There might have ended up being more, but at least four.
They missed two lobs in the first quarter of that in-season tournament game, Tim.
Okay.
The over-the-top is there. Like, with Valanciunas, A, not being able to really have a ton of vertical gravity on offense, and B, not being able to keep up with AD, you know, because they're playing drop and tagging, right? And so how many baseline dives did we see? We saw Rui getting them with those wraparound bounce passes from Braun, right?
Mm-hmm.
How they have to be more aggressive. They can't let it come to them, but that's also not really how they've played. So maybe it's them being more aggressive. We did see on Sunday them get some steals over the top and some like post-entry passes. So maybe they're going to try to, yeah, like you said, really blitz those passing lanes, force them to switch off ball and kind of beat them back door. But I don't see that going great for them either.
Yeah, I think what they might try to do is play drop and then use stunts from the perimeter to help and try to slow things down a bit. Like, play low, like no man behind with Valanciunas. Don't let AD get lobs over you, or at least do your best to defend those. And I think you actually mentioned this a couple pods ago, like try to make D'Lo make stuff happen in the mid range or force up a shot at the rim. Yeah. And I think that might be what they try to do. Stick Herb Jones point of attack, play deep drop, trust that he'll get that back pressure, and then, you know, stunt and recover to some of these other shooters. And I mean, if I'm going to lose to the Lakers, I'd rather it be because like Rui and I don't know, Austin and some other guys like knocked out a bunch of threes than I would be with like AD and LeBron getting dunks over me with lobs.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an interesting thing looking back at that game, you know, if Torian Prince making a bunch of threes, Cam Radish is in there spacing, and they were mostly sagging off of him, and he made his shots, you know, once they were, went on their run, they were couldn't miss from three in that game. But they've had several good shooting 3-point games against this team, and it's an athletic gap too. The bigs on New Orleans just aren't as athletic to get past the Lakers the way it would benefit most other them over most other teams. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm with you. The Lakers have a nice athleticism advantage with their front court in this one, and that vertical gravity, it's really helpful. It's really, really helpful. You know, Zion and Valanciunas are like, they're big guys, but the bounciness you get from Hayes, you get from Anthony Davis, you can get from LeBron on these cuts. You're getting from when Rui's cutting, he's dunking it, he's flushing it strong. That is all so valuable, especially when you also have the on-ball gravity that the Lakers have with Austin Reeves shooting 47-48% on his pull-up threes. D'Lo, you know, putting up a team high in three-pointers, like those sorts of things, team like historic high, franchise high, I mean to say, like those two things, the combination of the catch and shoot threes, the pull-up threes, and the lob threats makes the Lakers a really, really tough team to guard, especially when they're also doing great stuff on the weak side, like the cutting we saw from Rui, like the pin and flares we've seen. It's, you can't, against some teams, you can trust that on the weak side, they're just going to stand still. And, you know, I can leave you here, I'll be right back to you, but I got to go tag a roll man real quick. Against the Lakers, that's not the case. They're going to kill you with flare screens. They're going to kill you with cuts. And that is a big step forward in this season's team that really wasn't there on last year's team, that makes it really tricky for a less athletic Pelicans group to try to defend all of the different facets of the Laker offense.
Okay, so I was curious to hear what, maybe just do an offense scheme check-in. How have they looked lately? Where are they at when they're, you know, running more organized offense? And I was noticing on watching some of the film from the Lakers Pelicans this year, yeah, and that in-season tournament, they loved horns. They like the spread pick and roll and horns. Different sets of horns, chest or flare, whatever they call it. Horns dive a bunch. A little bit of double drag, but yeah, curious what you think on some of the plays we're going to see kind of spammed over again like we did on Sunday.
Yeah, so we ended up seeing the Lakers spam 8 different times at the start. 4 at the start of the first quarter, 4 at the start of the third quarter. They went to a play where they kind of passed slot to slot and then used a UCLA cut to get a cutter to the rim once they hit it for a layup. And then if that's not there, they then use the original screener to set a ball screen as the cutter, who's now under the rim, runs out to one of the corners for an exit screen. And that gives you a roll man option, a pick and roll like drive or pull up option, a kick out three option. It, you know, occupies some weak side defenders. You're going to get your roll man rolling to a side of the court where there's only one defender and one offensive player. So it's really tough for them to tag and recover. So it's just the Lakers get to that look a bunch of different ways, either from horns, from that UCLA entry I talked about, from the tight pin down series. They can get to that same look a lot of different ways, but they love to do so. And in those 8 plays, they scored, I think it was like 14 points. Like they were scoring really, really well. 8 times using basically the same thing is among the most I've seen from this team on the season. And zooming back out and just looking at the percentage of the plays the Lakers ran with their half court offense, where they ran a set, like an organized set play, or one of those help beaters I like to talk about. So collectively organized offense, over the past 15 games, that rate is the highest that we have seen for the Lakers all season long. Like they're right now peaking in an area that I consider a really, really important thing for them. Last game, they started out 71% in the first quarter. They ended up finishing the game 59% as the fourth quarter was like in the low 30s because they just sat on the ball. But
yeah,
71, 56, 59 for Q1, Q2, Q3 is like, that's going to get the job done, man. That is absolutely going to get the job done. And the game before this against Memphis, they were at 63% for the game. So they're peaking in an area that I think they have to be peaking in to win and to be a title contender. They're the healthiest that they have been in 2 months right now. And we no longer have to deal with back-to-backs. And when you look at this team healthy, rested, and running scheme at a high rate, they've been like almost unbeatable. And so I don't say that to say, you know, like I'm sure other teams are also better when they're healthy, better than they're rested, better when they're calling plays more. But this version of the Lakers right now that we're watching is a version of the Lakers that hasn't been here all season. But when they have shown up and done this, they've been really, really tough to beat. So I think they can give anybody a series. And I think they're, you know, this version of this team should overmatch New Orleans. Now, looking at specific sets, I think Horns is something that they can get to, the Horns dive or the Horns flare. I guess it really depends on what New Orleans does. If they're going to try to hedge, I expect to see a lot of Ram plays where you see AD start under the rim and D'Lo or Austin go set a down screen for him to then sprint up and set the ball screen. That'll kind of force the defense into drop coverage instead of being able to hedge. So if they're hedging, expect a lot of that. If they are in drop, expect a lot of stack plays with that Spain pick and roll. Expect some Horns flare. Expect, oh gosh, what else to go to? There's a lot in the playbook this year, which is nice. If they're switching, expect a lot of step up ball screens for inside seals. So the Lakers kind of have some go-tos. I expect New Orleans to really shift what they're doing defensively. And so kind of TBD, I can let you know kind of 2 minutes into the game, here's what I want to see a little bit more of.
Yeah.
Right now we'd be speculating, but I feel more confident right now than I did a year ago, knowing that there's no longer a big hole in the playbook in certain areas, or even as recent as a couple of months ago, we didn't see the Lakers have a bunch in for attacking drop coverage. They now do. And so I feel good that they'll get to what they need to, as long as they adjust quickly and don't, you know, run a drop coverage beating game plan against hedging, they should be okay.
So the last adjustment we saw, and they're, like you said, you mentioned on stream, it's a fun little quirk that they're playing the same team in the same city, you know, two games in a row. But you also get that last adjustment is not something you usually get the game before, right? This is a baseball series now. So, or this is more akin to a playoff series than any of the other play-in games because of the timing. But their last adjustment was Larry Nance starting the second half. That was when the Lakers really pushed that lead up, and they started to, you know, starters kind of got tired toward the end of it, a little bit of it go. Pelicans kept it pretty, you know, a little bit closer, but they were able to, what do you think about the new pass blocking sets, Tim? Because those are my favorite plays so far that the Lakers have added to the playbook.
I love it. I would love it if AD got a little bit lower. You want to have a good base.
I think you need a couple. I think you need to like flag football three-man offensive line it.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned it the other day. What if we instead of holding hands around Steph Curry, what if we held hands around the ball and let it roll around for a couple seconds? No, it's been funny to watch. I don't mind it. I think the kind of the old man in me looks at it like 2 minutes, 3 minutes into the third quarter of that game and says like, this is too early to, you know, have the mindset of the game's over. But
at the same time,
it was, you
schematic,
know,
strategic, right? That's what you were saying. They were spamming that play. It's like, why show them anything else? And it's working, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's something I liked about yesterday is in the fourth quarter, they almost ran like nothing and they didn't need to. And that was good. In the third quarter, they were up so much, they didn't really show the Pelicans anything different. They just kept running the same stuff. One, because of course it was working, but two, you know, why show any of our cards and give them something to prepare for? We don't need to. And I know like X's and O's in the NBA, a lot of teams run similar stuff, but what you run when, you know, there is plenty of diversity within the NBA and in basketball and scheme. And the Lakers have like hundreds of plays in their playbook. don't show the Pelicans what we think we want to use. Like, don't show them plan B, plan C until you need to go to them potentially tomorrow. Don't give them any extra chance to, you know, prep against it, because looking at the past 3, 4, 5 games is probably all the Pelicans did when it came to here's what the Lakers run, here's how to defend it. And so if the Lakers are, you know, holding on to their tight pin down series, which they haven't run much of recently, but had been super, super successful for them, like, it might have a little bit more of a punch that it packs potentially against Denver, we'll say, if they can avoid needing to use it tomorrow. And then Denver doesn't really have any of that on the film that they're likely to look at. So that could be an interesting element, not just tomorrow, but heading into round one, is the Lakers only playing the cards they need to play while still winning comfortably, is what you hope for. If it's close, you know, do what you got to do.
Yeah, we'll see how this Pelicans team. I was watching them play the Warriors, who they went absolutely on fire in the third quarter. The Pelicans did, with CJ McCollum and Trey Murphy going off. And those guys are hell of shooters, you know. CJ, say what you want about him, he's got to force him to get to the rim, not unlike D'Lo. Like, he's not a great guy at the rim. He can pull up on you, you know what I mean? Be aggressive on him. D'Lo and Austin have been fantastic lately. The defense, the intensity, the rotations, Tim. They're not perfect. They're not like, you know, top three defense per se, but I've been really impressed with the effort from those guys. And that goes a long way in just getting some deflections and being able to funnel things toward AD. And Bron has stepped up big too as well.
Yeah, we saw some good defensive playmaking early yesterday, and the aggression, the level of the team just being locked in, it was there. And I mean, part of it also was the fact that the Lakers were switching a lot early. We saw the Lakers in some high drop with AD against certain guys. We saw him in a deeper drop against Jose Alvarado. We actually saw LeBron often as the big man in the pick and roll action, because the Pelicans were putting Zion in as the roll man. So we got to see LeBron play some drop coverage. But it was interesting. We saw the Lakers hedge and switch a lot early in a way that was not their default throughout most of the season. And that kind of tells me, like, it's playoff time. They know what they're doing. They're game planning to beat the opponent. And it seemed to catch the Pelicans off guard and put the Laker players in good situations. So that is a, you know, a sign of, like, okay, these guys are ready to play. These guys, you know, they're locked in. This isn't vanilla game plan, Frank Vogel, you know, well, let's see if what we usually do will work sorts of approaches. And I've liked what I've seen out of it. And we've seen that trickle down to individual level success with, like, the Austin, I think he had a block, D'Lo had a steal. And if you can get that from the non-AD players, and you also have AD being dominant, like, that's, you know, you're going to have a good defense. And the Lakers defense has looked a bit better recently. And with the offense at its peak right now, from a scheme standpoint, if the defense can lock in at this level between those two sides of the court, like, that's really what you're looking for. And those two sides of the court play off each other too. We saw the defense directly turn to offense. It's not a smother you defense, make you take a tough shot. Like, we're seeing defensive playmaking, which leads to fast breaks, leads to easy points, leads to more fouls. And I like it. I've got no complaints.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think we'll probably see Zion get to the five at some point. Of course, if they want to do that, the Lakers can put LeBron at the five if AD's, you know, on the bench. These games, these guys are going to get a lot more minutes, so you have a lot less time to worry about, you know, a couple stretches without AD and LeBron together. I guess let's kind of, I want to ask you about the Lakers defense and their rotation. If you see, think we'll see any other major changes from what has been working for them. We got Gabe Vincent. We've had Jackson Hayes, a couple shifts off the bench, has been playing well lately. Do the Lakers need to get more from their bench? They have like a little bit of a run. Gabe has come back. We talked a little bit about him on stream, is kind of struggling to integrate, but he's a competent defender, and I think he can get minutes. Dinwiddie has his moments, gets a lot of ticky-tack fouls called on him, but he's a physical guy, big body. Do you see those minutes shrink in favor of more of the starters, or you think they'll keep going with some of those guys and maybe can get even more minutes?
I think the Lakers will likely be situational and, series to series, opponent to opponent, based on who they're putting out there. And, the tactics may dictate things as well. I think the guys they played yesterday will likely be the guys we see tomorrow, with same starters and then Dinwiddie, Prince, and Hayes as kind of the main backups, with Vincent Moore, 10th man off the bench. And really, Hayes, because he backs up LeBron and AD, he's not going to play a ton either. But I think that's likely the 9-man grouping we'll see again. In terms of the Lakers giving time to the starters, or more time to the starters, this was actually something I was just looking at with scouting Denver. In looking at, Denver plays their starters the most of any team in the NBA, and they have for some time, and it's not always been the best approach. They often play zero starters more frequently than most other teams and get the crap beat out of them, but the starters have been very good. And looking at how the Lakers compare, how Denver looked regular season to playoffs, and that percentage, it was about the same. But the Lakers last season, going from the regular season to the playoffs, had a dramatic increase in the percentage of the time they had all five starters on the court. It went from 23% of the time in the regular season last year to 32% of the time. So It went out about 50%, which, and that's the starters for that purpose is kind of defined game to game. So it doesn't necessarily mean like these five specific guys, but the five guys that started the game were getting much more time for LA last playoffs than they were last regular season. And I guess to answer your question, we might see more starter time. I think you're early enough that you can, you need to win this game. So
yes,
I don't think you kind of hold anything back. I think probably first half, especially, you lean heavily on your best players. We might see more of an eight and a half man is really what we saw yesterday. I think that sounds about right for tomorrow. This is in a situation where you're the one seed playing an eight seed and you're planning on making a deep run. And so you keep the rotation big, and then you slowly, narrow it down over time. And that's really what we saw from the Lakers last postseason. And that was, doing that as a lower seed also. But I think probably eight and a half men is what I'd expect to see. And I don't think we're going to see any changes in terms of who is in there.
Okay, so let's talk about this then. Let's talk about should the Lakers lose to not play Denver. We briefly discussed it. I mentioned it at the top and on the playback stream before we started recording. That's crazy. You never mess with the basketball gods. As far as, say you try to manipulate the situation, somebody hits 10 threes, you get 30 free throws against you, or there's so many things that can go wrong. AD gets three fouls in the first 10 minutes, right? It's very dangerous to play with that. It is a variance game after all, even though things, over time give you a good look at what somebody can do well and what they can't. Anytime Dante Exum can just murder you and rip your heart out, and Lonnie Walker you, if you will, Tim. There's many examples across basketball time. These are just some current relevant ones maybe to our plight. So there's nothing else, right? Like strategically, like you win this game. Also, it gets you multiple days until you play on Saturday.
Yeah, you get the extra time for rest. Substantially more time for rest. You don't put yourself in a do or die situation. I mean, even against the Pelicans, like the thing I think I'm worried about most with them is they're one of the highest 3-point frequency teams in the NBA. They're going to jack up a bunch of threes. If they have a hot shooting game, that can be really tough. And, going to the 9-10 or playing the winner of the 9-10, those are a couple teams with some explosive offenses and offenses that have a lot of upside and can hit a lot of threes, and that can be problematic as well. I would say I favor the Lakers in that second matchup if they do lose this first game, but still not enough that you should feel comfortable just throwing this one. Absolutely not. And I don't think there's a big enough difference between Denver and Oklahoma City either to dictate throwing this game. So yeah, I don't think it's a great strategy. I understand it. Like, if you were in a situation where you could pick who to play in the first round and that was the only factor, like, yeah, I would rather not play Denver. But putting yourself on the edge of the cliff in order to try to, you know, exercise that preference isn't quite the same thing. Now, if they lose this game, they win the next one, okay, you know, we're in an okay spot, but that additional risk, I don't think is really worth it. I think there are merits to playing Denver earlier in the playoffs as well, before they kind of, you know, really lock in and get on a roll. Right now, the Lakers are on a roll schematically. Right now, the Lakers are really, really healthy, relatively. Now, they don't have Vando. He's someone I think you'd want in the Denver series, but he's also someone that, having just listened back to some of my scouting report from last year, I was pleading, please start Rui, don't start Vando against Denver. Please don't throw game one. And we saw the Lakers actually go small with three guards instead and lose that first game. You know, if Vando were back, I think he would come off the bench. So I'm not necessarily worried about him taking over that starting spot. But I think there's some reasons why, you know, playing them immediately could be better. I can understand wanting to wait as well. I can understand wanting to avoid them and maybe not even having to play them. But it's not like OKC is like Milwaukee, where they've stunk recently, the vibes are bad. And, you know, maybe that's a situation where you're like, oh, this team's really bad. Or like, this team is vastly overseeded compared to their recent play. Maybe that's more interesting. No, Oklahoma City's been beating the hell out of teams, and they're the one seed for a reason. They're a very, very good team, and they've got an MVP candidate. I know LA's fared well against them in some of these games, but not enough so that you, again, put your back against the wall and maybe end your season on Thursday trying to position yourself for Sunday.
Yeah, you never want to feel too confident. You got to go in and do the work. Lakers are in a good spot with their offensive play calling, their performance. They're still shooting the ball pretty well lately. The effort's been there. That Grizzlies game was a little concerning in the first half, not going to lie, but they were able to pull things out despite, you know, Memphis shooting the ball really, really well as well. I'm trying to find other worries here, Tim. AD and foul trouble, definitely one of them. So them going into the postseason without Vando right away, without Wood, you know, AD getting into foul trouble complicates things. Hayes has been playing well, but putting that on him, other complications you could see. Are they going to start to target D'Lo more? What do you think about his place and the defense, and how has he looked kind of hedging and trying to, you know, maintain his status out there, not get playing off the court?
Yeah, no, good call out. That's something you and I hadn't talked about, but I just put up on a Q&A bonus pod for the Discord subscribers at the lower bowl tier and above. That went up an hour or so ago. That is one of the adjustments I think the Pels might go to as well, is running inverted ball screens for Ingram or for Zion and throwing CJ or someone else in that action to try to pull D'Angelo Russell into the play. And then if he switches, great, go attack him. And if he doesn't switch, it's because he's showing and recovering. And I think he's done well with that. I think his technique has been good and it's fared well. But if you can get, you can run that and get like a short roll for CJ McCollum attacking a 4v3, that's a pretty favorable situation as well. So if I'm the Pelicans, that's one of the things I try to be very deliberate about doing this upcoming game, and could be a good way. Let's say you do go small, Zion's at the five and AD's guarding him, pulling AD into the, you know, screening AD with CJ McCollum. So now he's out of the play and McCollum can catch in the 4v3, and AD's not one of those players in among the three defenders. That could be an interesting situation as well. So there are options here for New Orleans. There are things they could do smarter. I think part of the analysis here needs to also be like, know your opponent. And I haven't been impressed with what I've seen from New Orleans from a coaching standpoint in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And I don't expect them to suddenly figure these things out. This has been a team that
I watched at points
I've been aligned with. Yeah.
You plead the fifth when you're going to criminalize yourself or, you know, put yourself in jeopardy to be prosecuted for a crime. What does that mean?
It's I don't know. I think the Lakers are, they've got good odds tomorrow. We'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, if magically somebody whispered the perfect answers into Willie Green's ear because they have some anti-Laker agenda, what else could it be? Like, is that really, do they have the personnel to even execute that with like CJ McCollum?
I think they have the personnel offensively to execute what I just said. Now the Lakers can just adjust and put, they could put AD on someone else and
pre-switch or
you just pre-switch. Yeah. You could pre-switch or just like make sure he's in the three of the 4v3 and you should be fine there.
Yeah.
In terms of the Pelicans offense, I don't see them having there's no magic bullet here. There's nothing like, oh, if we would have just done this, we're going to crush the Laker defense. I don't really see that. I think the Lakers match up well with this team. When I look at what the Pelicans have done well and often, it's, when we look at their play types, it's putbacks, isolations, and post-ups. And the post-up piece, I'm not worried about. The putback piece, again, not a concern if Valanciunas isn't in the game. And the ISO piece, like the Lakers match up well with Zion. They match up well with Ingram. And they've got Anthony freaking Davis on the back line. So this is just not a team that's built well to beat the Lakers. And on the other end of the court, in terms of guarding LA, I also don't really see, like, I see fewer options. I see things they can go to, but I just don't see anything that doesn't involve just hoping the Lakers miss shots. They're not equipped well to switch. The Lakers have what they would want in the playbook to attack whatever the Pelicans can throw at them. So as long as guys aren't, you know, missing pull-up threes or getting overwhelmed by hedges, and as long as Darvin Ham doesn't fall asleep with the play calling, oh man, I really, really see it's going to be a tough matchup for the Pelicans to try to overcome. And I think this is a terrible draw for them trying to advance out of the play-in. And they've had a really good season. They've got some good promising players. It's nice to see Brandon Ingram succeed, but I think the season might be over for them tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, they'll have another shot to play the Kings or the Warriors, but yeah. I'm not, you know, if it's the Kings, if they're able to pull it off, kind of feels like it's going to be the Warriors, kind of just based on them being the healthiest and the maybe most talented at the time. But mm-hmm. Pelicans, I think a big thing to keep an eye on, to your point, that three-point variance, Murphy, McCollum, and Jones. Is Zion going to shoot at all? Like, they're able to sag so far off of him when he catches it up there at the elbow. They got guys, Rui, AD, Diggin. Like, they're already zoned up that. You know what I mean? If you look at them, it's like the gap. It's like in football. It's like a linebacker mm-hmm. and defensive tackle, like their alignment. Did you notice that?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. It makes it really hard to try to drive and get into the paint. And looking at the Pelicans with our B-ball index data, looking at the 3-point shot making for these guys, like you and just the volumes, like you can really tag off of Valanciunas, Nance, Zion, Alvarado, and Daniels, Dyson Daniels, if he plays there, that's five guys of, three, four, six, seven. That's like five out of the 10 or 11 that they might play that you don't really have to worry about. And that's going to make life really, really difficult for the rim shot creators this team has with Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum. And so, and Zion as well. So I don't know. I think they're overmatched. This Lakers team is much better than the Pelicans, at least with healthy, like they are now, running scheme like they are. This is what I'm shocked right now. It looks like the Pelicans are favored for this game, and I don't understand that.
It's crazy. Like LeBron taking on Zion too. He really took him on, like matchup mm-hmm. in, matchup out.
Yeah. And he held his own. And between LeBron and Rui, like you've got the guys with the girth and the ability to stay in front just enough that you know, keep Zion in front. Don't let him get anything easy. Don't let him draw fouls. And then OAD is also there to help. Is a really, really nice place to be.
I don't know. We don't want to get too exceptionalism all over the listeners, but feeling confident. Again, let's pivot to maybe a what if they, and we'll pod if they do lose the game, and we'll have to go into that home game at least. which is, you know, why you wanted to get into that eight spot against the Kings or the Warriors and do another little scouting report touch-in. And before that, hopefully we'll get either a Denver or an OKC scouting report up as well by Saturday, if it's the two. I think they're both on the two. Anyway, I'm not going to look at the schedule right now. But I don't know. We've just been talking how confident we are feeling about this, Tim. I guess give me your worst case scenario that you can think up in your creative basketball mind.
For this game?
Yeah. Outside of like mass injuries or
I was going to say injuries are a factor. I would say AD gets in foul trouble because let's say whether the Pelicans play big or small, Zion is able to attack the rim with some force, draw some fouls on Anthony Davis. Maybe there's like a moving screen in there or something, and that limits his availability. You get Jackson Hayes time in the game, and maybe like the Lakers playing small, and with Hayes in the game, Ingram's able to get to the rim a bit better. They throw Valanciunas out there, and he's able to, you know, kind of bully on the boards. They get a little bit of their post game going, and then on the other end of the court, we'll say, and then also offensively for the Pels, they're just hitting, you know, 45% of their threes, 50% of their threes at a high rate of frequency, and so that's a lot of points, 80 in foul trouble, and then on the other end of the court, I'd say, let's think, a lot of it comes down to like the Lakers not calling plays or not calling plays well, which. We can see this has been an inconsistent play calling team. Just because they've been really, really good recently doesn't necessarily mean that'll continue. We have seen some inexplicable drops from them at different points in the season, going from really good to, oh, wait, you know, we forgot the playbook today. So it's possible. And maybe we see the Pelicans go smaller, switch a bunch of stuff, do a good job getting underneath the roll man and sagging off to take away those hits on the roll to the roll man. And maybe the Lakers throw the ball away a couple times. It leads to some transition, and it otherwise gets the Lakers out of their offense. And then, you know, it turns into the LeBron dribble around, shoot a pull up three show, which will create a lot of one and done sort of plays. And you know, something like that, I think, would be worst case scenario. You get taken out of your offense, partially because of your own fault. Your best defensive player is injured or is in foul trouble. You're giving up a lot in transition because the offense isn't able to do a good job. And then because you're allowing the other team to score, you're starting everything from the half court, not getting that transition boost. And if AD's out, it hurts you on the boards. And there's a big discrepancy between just scoring possession volume between turnovers and offensive rebounds.
Yeah. I mean, you'll probably see them do super aggressive full court. Like we saw them be, you know, pretty aggressive there, wasting the Lakers time, not letting them get into sets. You know, maybe you can force some turnovers. I really think they're going to be really aggressive in the passing lane, jumping, like I said, going over the top, chasing behind. So we'll see early if the deflections are high. Obviously, offensive rebounds, like you said, the putbacks. Lakers are strong in the post up. So, you know, like you said, not worried about that. And then 3-point variance. They won by 20 without D'Lo in that game I've been referencing, right? It also, Rui only played 7.5 minutes. Looks like he probably got injured in that game. So they lost Rui. This is one of those games where like Jalen Hutchevino played. And
oh, I remember this one.
And they hit 17 threes, 50%. They made 22 free throws and they got 12 offensive rebounds.
Sounds right.
Like that's a like win by 30, you know, it feels like, yeah, they won by 20, but the Lakers were 31% from three, 10 for 32. They made 21 free throws of their own, but turned the ball over 13 times and it's over if they have that many more possessions than you and plus that many threes and that much better field goal percentage.
Yeah. So, and this is a team too, that like they've got the 7th best free throw rate offensively on the season. They crashed the 6th most of any team on the offensive boards. If they can get AD in foul trouble and then are able to crash the boards and get those second chances, like I can see that kind of snowballing a bit in theory.
We'll see. It's going to be a good one, man. I'm feeling good. We're not talking too much about Denver in this one, obviously, because they got to go take care of business. So that's what we'll do, Tim. We'll keep our focus on what matters right now.
Mm-hmm. Unless you want to get answers now, and in which case go to the Discord and I'll answer your questions there.
Exactly. Perfect.
There's the draw. You got to pull them in. Yeah, lots of good stuff in there. We've got, I just put up a bonus Q&A pod that people had questions about this game and then also that Denver series potentially. Really, really good questions, by the way. Thank you, everyone, for submitting those. So that's up. That's about 40 minutes. Lots of good content in there. Lots of different tiers. You'll get access to the X's and O's tracking. A bunch of good stuff. So give that a look. Oh, one last thing I want to mention. If AD does get in foul trouble, I wouldn't be surprised if the Pelicans go to some zone defense, because the Lakers without AD attacking zone hasn't been great.
I was going to bring up the zone. And the reason I feel like it's not going to happen is that it's one of those things that you mentioned on the stream. You need to like dash it in. You need to mix it in to where it's not just after every made basket for 4 minutes, right?
Just like you were mentioning with the full court press, it's just to slow down the Lakers, make them kill shot clock time. We saw when the Pelicans went to zone, like the first time the Pelicans went to zone, every time, it took the Lakers an extra 5, 6, 7 seconds to get into what they wanted. And then the next time it was the same thing, they were ready for it. The third time it was the same thing, they were ready for it. So if you can mix it up frequently as just that change up, that just inherently kills time, or the Lakers attack it thinking it's one thing when really it's the other.
Yeah, maybe you're able to at least alter the way the Lakers are trying to call plays for themselves, right? To take control and maybe, you know, operate from a place of strength rather than just being a reactionary defense.
Yep, and they've used it fifth most among all NBA teams this year, only 4.8% of the time, but they've occasionally used it for 20-plus plays. So you got to be prepared. They had the third-best defensive efficiency in zone this season, and so, you know, it held its own. It's still much worse than their man-to-man defense, as zone defense generally is, but if you're unprepared or it catches you off guard, it can be effective. Or again, if AD is out of the game and the Lakers are trying to operate between the high post and running a guy short corner to short corner, and they're in a smaller lineup, that just doesn't work as well. I think what the Lakers want to do and how they operate against a 2-3 zone is contingent upon having that lob threat in there and being able to work the inside of the paint. And if both AD and Hayes are off the court, I think that's a great time for the Pelicans to run a zone, because the Lakers' approach just doesn't really work against that.
Yeah. I wonder. We'll see. I'm not too worried about it. I also feel like zone frequency probably goes down in the playoffs. Like, it's a less viable playoff thing.
I don't know. That's a good question. I could take a look at that.
Yeah. I mean, there's only so much, you know, info on it. Not every team even runs it with any regularity, but that's all we got. We're trying to kind of break down this matchup. Thank you. We'll be here for the game, so come hang out. I know it's an early one on the Pacific time zone, but that's nice for you. And Tim, we're gonna hit this thing full throttle now that it's playoff time.
We sure are. I'm excited. Hopefully this is another long stretch of content and Laker games. It's really nice to see them rounding into shape. I had a lot of, I don't know, I've been reflecting, and like, I don't think I've seen a team that has had such a discrepancy between what they show us in a good way and what they're also like in a bad way. And there's so much potential missed opportunity and potential with this team if the season just kind of goes out with a fizzle. And so I'm excited to see them kind of put things together, be a dangerous team. It's, you know, hopefully they can win tomorrow. They've got a really, really tough first round matchup, if so. But if you can win that one, you leave that series thinking like, nobody's beating us. Like, if we can beat Denver, we can beat anybody. And so, you know, you're going to get the big test really early, but you know, either way, I think you're going to have to go through Denver. So yeah. Bring it. Let's go. I'm excited.
Absolutely. We'll leave it there for this week. Be on the lookout. Follow us on Playback if you don't already, where we recorded this live, interacted with some people on chat, kind of got to some of their ideas and points and questions. So follow us there. Turn on notifications to get told when we go live. And thanks, everybody. Talk to y'all next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.